the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network presents Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis. Each week, Joan brings you news from inside the Vatican and the Church around the world, as well as interviews and answers to your questions. Now, here's the host of Vatican Insider, Joan Lewis.
Welcome to a new edition of Vatican Insider on another event-filled weekend in the Vatican, including Mass celebrated by Pope Leo XIV on Saturday, November 1st, for the Solemnity of All Saints and for participants in the Jubilee of Education. During this Mass, St. John Henry Newman will be proclaimed Doctor of the Church and co-patron, along with St. Thomas Aquinas, of the Church's educational mission. November 1st is a holiday in the Vatican and in Italy. After the news, stay tuned for the interview segment and part two of my conversation with Jesuit Father Thomas Merkel, president of the D.C.-based Gregorian University Foundation. This was established in 1972 with the aim of supporting Rome's Pontifical Gregorian University through raising much-needed funds for scholarships, academic chairs, libraries, and capital improvements. We talk about the annual October colloquium when the foundation's board of trustees and members gather to visit the Greg, as the university is called in Rome, attend a class or two, and meet the students from around the world. Men and women, lay people and religious, seminarians and sisters, priests and missionaries. Father Merkel has some great stories as he talks about what the Gregorian University means to the Church and to the world. So stay tuned for that. And now the top stories in the Vatican this week. Sunday, October 26th, at Mass for the Jubilee of the Synodal Teams and Participatory Bodies in St. Peter's Basilica, Leo XIV invited participants to reflect on the mystery of the Church. She is not simply a religious institution with hierarchies and structures. Rather, the Church is the visible sign of the union between God and humanity, where God brings everyone together as one family, united in love. He said, "We are called in the Church to walk together in the pursuit of God, and clothing ourselves in the sentiments of Christ, we expand the ecclesial space so that it becomes collegial and welcoming." Later Sunday afternoon, again at Mass in the Basilica, Leo ordained Polish Monsignor Miroslav Wachowski a bishop, having previously named him nuncio to Iraq. In his homily, the Holy Father urged him to foster peaceful coexistence and to collaborate constructively with other religions in a land marked by suffering and by the desire for rebirth. Monday, October 27th, Pope Leo XIV welcomed His Holiness Mar Awa III, the Catholicos Patriarch of the Assyrian Church of the East, as well as the members of the Joint Commission for the Theological Dialogue between the Catholic Church and the Assyrian Church of the East. He said their combined visits bear witness to the fact that fraternal encounter and theological dialogue are mutually constitutive elements on the path towards unity. He said the dialogue of truth is an expression of the love that already unites our churches, while the dialogue of charity must also be understood theologically. Also Monday, the Vatican released the itinerary for Pope Leo's first foreign apostolic trip, when he will travel to Turkey and Lebanon from November the 27th to December 2nd. Also on Monday, Pope Leo XIV signed an apostolic letter to commemorate the 60th anniversary of Gravissimum Educationis before presiding over Holy Mass for the Jubilee of the World of Education. On Tuesday the 28th, Pope Leo's apostolic letter, Drawing New Maps of Hope, marking the 60th anniversary of the Conciliar Declaration Gravissimum Educationis, was published. He writes that the insights of Gravissimum Educationis remain relevant in today's fragmented and digitalized environment, continuing to inspire educational communities to build bridges and to offer civic and professional formation with creativity. This direction, he said, first traced by the Second Vatican Council, has generated a rich array of works and charisms that remain a spiritual and pedagogical treasure for the Church. Also Tuesday, at the closing of the International Meeting for Peace, Religions, and Cultures in Dialogue, organized by the Sant'Egidio community, Pope Leo XIV joined leaders of the world's religion at Rome's Colosseum. This was happening in early evening for a meeting for prayer for peace. He renewed the Church's call for reconciliation, dialogue, and fraternity among all peoples. We have prayed for peace according to our diverse religious traditions, and we are now gathered together to proclaim a message of reconciliation. Conflicts are present in all parts of life, but war is no help in dealing with them or finding solutions. Peace is a constant journey of reconciliation. Also Tuesday, Pope Leo XIV presided at, quote, Walking Together in Hope, a celebration of 60 years of Nostra Aetate, Vatican Council II's declaration on interreligious dialogue. He said 60 years ago, with the publication of Nostra Aetate, a seed of hope for interreligious dialogue was planted. Today, your presence bears witness that this seed has grown into a mighty tree, its branches reaching far and wide, offering shelter and bearing the rich fruits of understanding, friendship, cooperation, and peace. Wednesday, October 29. Pope Leo's catechesis at the Wednesday General Audience focused on the importance of Jewish-Catholic relations, stating, quote, All my predecessors have condemned anti-Semitism with clear words. Leo said, I too confirm that the Church does not tolerate anti-Semitism and fights against it on the basis of the gospel itself. He said, quote, We cannot deny that there have been misunderstandings, difficulties, and conflicts in the 60 years since the publication of Nostra Aetate, but these have never prevented the dialogue from continuing. Even today, we must not allow political circumstances and the injustices of some to divert us from friendship, especially since we have achieved so much so far. The Pope expressed his gratitude to leaders and representatives of different faiths for their presence at the General Audience. At the end of the General Audience on Wednesday, Pope Leo expressed his closeness to those affected by Hurricane Melissa, calling it a storm of catastrophic power, and he encouraged civil authorities to do everything possible to support those affected. Thursday, October 30th, Pope Leo challenged students participating in the Jubilee of the World of Education to work for a better society through education, saying it is one of the most beautiful and powerful tools for changing the world. His meeting with students and educators was originally planned to take place in the Paul VI Hall, but there was also a sizable overflow crowd waiting outside the Basilica, and the Holy Father greeted them as well. In fact, response was so great for the Jubilee of Education that the November 1st Mass, originally set to take place in St. Peter's Basilica, has been moved to St. Peter's Square. Friday, October 31st, was a very busy day for Leo XIV as he welcomed participants in the Jubilee of Education during a special audience in St. Peter's Square. He met members of the International Youth Advisory Board of the Dicastery for Laity, Family, and Life, and he also welcomed members of the Organization of Catholic Universities of Latin America and the Caribbean. Well, those are the top stories, but now, stay tuned for my conversation with Father Tom Merkel, president of the Gregorian University Foundation.
He is honored as the newest Doctor of the Church with the title Doctor of Unity.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
A second century bishop, theologian, and martyr, St. Irenaeus of Lyon was a fierce defender of the faith against the heresy of Gnosticism. He reminded Catholics of every century that heresy cloaks itself in appealing guise, but that the antidote is the sound teaching handed down by the apostles.
To find out more, visit EWTN.com and click on Catholicism.
The EWTN home video highlight for October is His Body and Blood, Franciscan Saints on the Eucharist. In this EWTN original docudrama, learn how St. Francis of Assisi, St. Clare, St. Padre Pio, and St. Paschal Bailon found their divine inspiration within the Blessed Sacrament. Order your DVD at EWTNRC.com, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or call 1-800-854-6316.
At EWTN, Real News Minute is next.
The year 374 AD. Monica, mother of St. Augustine, is a pious Christian woman from North Africa. Although she strives to instill Christian values in her son, the young Augustine slowly distances himself from the light of Christianity and enters the dark world of Manichaeism. His wayward behavior hurts Monica deeply. In tears, she prays day and night for the conversion of her lost son. When Augustine travels to Italy after finishing his studies, Monica follows him to Rome and later to Milan to prevent him from falling deeper into sin. In Milan, Augustine meets Bishop Ambrose and is amazed by his sermons. He formally converts to Christianity in 386 AD after reading the letter of St. Paul to the Romans.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider. Here's Joan Lewis.
Welcome back to part two of my conversation with Father Thomas Merkel, president of the D.C.-based Gregorian University Foundation. This was set up in 1972 with the purpose of supporting the Pontifical Gregorian University in Rome through raising much-needed funds for scholarships, academic chairs, libraries, and capital improvements. We talk about the annual October colloquium when the foundation's board of trustees and members gather to visit the Greg, as it's called in Rome, attend a class or two, and meet the students from around the world, men and women, laypeople and religious, seminarians and sisters, priests and missionaries. Father Merkel has some great stories as he talks about what the Gregorian University means to the Church and to the world. We ended part one by talking about the cost of an education at the Gregorian University and some of the projects that the foundation is working on to help the university. Are there any projects in the sense of building, renovating?
Significant right now, for the university is the renovation of some of its libraries mm-hmm. and the ongoing processing and digitization of its collection.
Oh, yes.
And yeah. if you think about the concept I shared before about the moat, right? And some people would say, why don't you guard your collection? Why don't you just keep it to yourself? Why would you want to create the access to your collection that can be shared by scholars in other universities around the world that are interested in the study of ancient languages?
The Orientale has
in particular
a phenomenal library.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. No, I did a story there about 2 or 3 years ago. I interviewed, I'm not sure if he's still the head of the Orientale, father from Canada, David.
David Nazar.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And he was so interesting because he's a man of great vision, forward-looking something. And when
tremendous.
When he first came, and it was before COVID, this is important. When he first came, he started renovating here. We got to update technology. We have kids who can't afford, or priests, seminarians, nuns, who can't afford to come to study in and live in Rome. And we got to do, distance study, etc. And we just have to upgrade all of our facilities that help impart that. Well, of course, you know what? When COVID did come along, the only university prepared in the city, of course, was the Greg, and in particular the Orientale.
So exactly.
Being forward looking is very important.
Right. And again, the idea that, the Gregorian really shares its resources with other scholars around the world is just a gift,
sure.
again, for the Church,
for humanity,
for our faith,
yeah.
for the kingdom of God,
yeah.
for humanity.
But, not to let people in would be like the Pope saying, hey, let's not evangelize.
Exactly.
Because his order is,
exactly.
go out and evangelize. To
right.
you as a priest, to me,
yeah.
as a layperson, we're all to have our part in imparting the faith, so.
Absolutely. I think it's what Jesus shares with his disciples, right?
Yeah.
Go out and baptize and
exactly.
disciples of all.
But I know one other thing. Of course, I went on the site to learn more about the foundation. I saw that there's something called the 1551 Society.
Society.
Yes. Tell us about that.
Well, that basically would translate into an annual fund campaign. So to any number of people, we share that information with them, and it provides a leveled way for them to support our work. And generally speaking, it can go from the $50 gift to the $15,551.
Because that's the date that Ignatius Loyola founded
the Roman College.
The Roman College. You know.
And in saying that, I think it's important for people to know, if you think about what Ignatius did, if the Society of Jesus was started in 1540, and by the time Ignatius dies in 1556, they had gone from, let's say, at its founding, about a core group, you know, a dozen members, to 1,000 members 16 years later. Ignatius never really intended to get into education. His desire was to help souls. He wanted to bring God's salvation to people.
Sure.
And education wasn't the initial means that he had thought of using to do that. He gets a request from the people and leaders in Messina, Italy, in 1548, and they ask, you know, would you begin a school in Messina? And that was the first Jesuit school.
Oh.
3 years later, he makes a decision to form the Roman College, because now, of course, he's got his own membership that needs solid theological education to be able to serve people, preach the gospel, care for souls,
sure,
educate, and in some cases reform some of the abuses that were prevalent in the Catholic Church at that time, and also to have sound theology and people who were educated to be able to dialogue with some of the Protestant reformers.
Oh, yeah.
And so Ignatius starts the Roman College for that reason, but then he and his companions, his Jesuit companions, in those 8 years before he dies, they start 35 schools across Europe. And then later, because they had, I mean, think about that. That's 35 schools in 8 years. It's, you know, 4 to 5 schools starting per year.
Phenomenal.
And all the infrastructure and everything you have to do to be able to create a network of schools. Well, now there are, of course, thousands of Jesuit schools, pre-secondary, college prep, universities around the world. But, it was really, fascinating that Ignatius learned, after he had started these first few schools, that education would be a great tool for evangelization.
Oh, absolutely, in 1,000 ways. Ways you can count and ways you may not think of it.
Right.
And when the students leave a university and go out into the world, et cetera, it's like the sending a stone out on a body of water, the ripple effect.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful image.
Now, the colloquium, there were 30-some of you or 40-some of you this
year?
No,
30-some.
30-some, yeah. I got to meet them over the various dinners. But what are most of them bringing home, especially the first-timers who've come to the October colloquium? What are they bringing home with them?
I think one of the things that strikes them most significantly is the universality of the Catholic Church. And, I mean, of course, you see that in Rome.
Yeah, every day.
All the time. But, you know, everybody, when we're back home in the United States, you know, it's almost like your focus narrows and you're concerned about the things in front of you. And you aren't thinking as broadly as the way the faith permeates itself around the world. And
At the school, they're going to be surrounded by students and teachers from every continent.
Maybe minus Antarctica.
But Antarctica, I forgot about that, yes.
But of the 3,300 students that attend the Gregorian University, they come from over 120 countries.
Oh.
And so you get this, you just get this feeling of, you know, the world comes to meet here in Rome.
All you have to do in the morning is go, or afternoon, go down to have a coffee.
right.
And you're sitting with the most amazing student body.
Yes, and so, for example, you were talking about how, you know, we've been here after the colloquium for meetings, and so we visited, the Gregorian has, in addition to primarily theology and philosophy, but they also do work in the social sciences, including psychology. And so we visited with the director of the psychology program, and she toured us through the building and brought us into a couple of classrooms. And she introduced us as being from the Gregorian University Foundation, and then asked the students to say, you know, where they had come from. It was
a little United Nations.
A little United yeah. Nations, Malaysia, India, China, Mexico, Honduras. I mean, it just went on. You know, Brazil, and I mean, it was, and then Croatian countries,
oh, sure.
and it just went on and on. And you think this is an international university,
yeah.
And I think that, you know, so for our colloquium participants, you know, it creates a different context, right?
Sure.
You know, we all live in a context, and you know, but it broadened their vision and opened their eyes to something that really is much, much greater.
And you're right, because when I am home on vacation, or I can even be in New York, Washington, or someplace for a week for an event, I know I'm in America. I know I'm not in Rome.
This right, week, right.
Where I'm going to see the habits of nuns from all over the world,
yes,
hear the languages.
And even though, I mean, in the United States, I mean, we're a very diverse nation.
But, exactly.
But it doesn't hit you in the same way as seeing these people from a variety of nations sitting together
oh, yeah.
in the same classroom. And, you know, that is what makes the education at the Gregorian University so valuable, is that they are forced to understand a theological concept, looking at it from the context of their home,
sure.
but also listening to the
sure.
context that this word is spoken to across the world.
For my listeners who want to know more, I'll be publishing the news about our interview when it airs, and then I'm going to put up some links to the foundation, because that there is a way to find out about how to find out more about even being part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the foundation, other than maybe just donating, and somebody who simply would love to make a donation or adopt a scholar can do that.
Yes. Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because, you know, as a foundation, obviously our first responsibility is to raise funds to support the university. But we also do some other work during the course of the year, which tries to make the Gregorian University concrete for people who do support us, or even for those people who just want to avail of themselves of our services. And so we do a distinguished lecture series, usually once or twice a year, and let me give you an example. We had this past year, Father Sam Sawyer, who's the executive director of America Media. So
oh, okay.
most people may
sure.
think of America Magazine.
Is he right? Jesuit run?
And Father Christian Sains, who teaches church history at the Gregorian University. Well, these two men had a dialogue. You know, this was our distinguished lecture. They had a dialogue about the conclave. Well, Father Christian was able to speak about it from the perspective of church history. And Father Sam Sawyer was... And so Father Christian is obviously here in Rome, full-time. But Father Sam Sawyer, you know, he was in Rome covering the conclave for America Magazine and America Media. So these two went back and forth, and it was attended by well over 1,000 people, and and it's recorded on YouTube. And so somebody could find our distinguished lecture online. It's captured on a YouTube video. But that's an example of something we do for the church to try to make known the Gregorian University. Sure. But we also do a couple of retreats. So we'll have students and faculty members from the Gregorian University who will do a Lenten and an Advent retreat. And this is a extra support to people's spiritual lives. Sure. And there's no charge to participate. Sure. And those can be found on our website.
Oh, well, I'll keep track of that then. I did not know that. Yeah, I want to thank you for your time, because I know you've just, from the moment you get up until you put your head back on the pillow, it's been a fun, wonderful time, because the Greg is special. The members of the board and everybody who comes with you is special. And then you invite seminarians, for example, to come who study at the Greg. You invite American seminarians to come to some of the dinners. We get to know them. They get to know the foundation. So I know you're busy nonstop and still have things to do, but I really appreciate your time. And again, what I should have said halfway through our conversation is, by the way, if you've just tuned in, you know, we are with Father Thomas Merkel, head of the Gregorian University Foundation. But I get so involved in the conversation, I forget that I should say that. So
Sure. That's
where we've been, folks, and I hope everybody enjoys it. And get to know more about the foundation, and I will help you with that on my blog. So
we say, if you support the Gregorian University Foundation, you support the Gregorian University, which supports the church, our faith, and supports the world.
And on those beautiful words, thank you very much for being my guest. Really appreciate it. And I know my listeners would say the same thing if they were here.
Okay, well, thank you.
God bless you.
Joan, God bless you.
For more information on these stories, or to check out Joan's blog and to ask her a question, go to EWTN.com. That's EWTN.com. Thanks for listening to Vatican Insider on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.